3-1 pitch to Colton Wong. Here it comes. And he walked him, and this game is over. Colton Wong, bases loaded, walk. The Cardinals take 2 of 3. They score 4 in the bottom of the ninth, and they win it 6-5.
That had to be one of the worst ninth innings I have ever seen in my life last night with the Royals and the Cardinals. I don't know if I've seen a team gift-wrapped a game any more than the Royals did last night. And I have lots of questions about that game. And I do have questions about Mike Matheny after what he did last night. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade and Dusty with you. Brandy Paul, head volleyball coach of the Bullet Trojans, will join us here in just a little bit. But let's deal with the Royals. Then we'll have Brandy on, and then we will address the whole boycotting taking place in sports. You'll want to hear from some of the participants, and that will take us a little bit of time to discuss all that. You can be sure, because it affects many different sports and many different people. So last night, I turned on the Royals game just in time for Ryan McBroom to come to the plate, pinch hit for Cam Gallagher. Gallagher had a two-run homer earlier in the game. Matheny puts McBroom in. They hit for a guy that had attributed for the only runs they had the whole night. And Matheny comes up spades. McBroom crushes a home run. Royals are up 3-2. And then Trevor Rosenthal comes in with one out in the eighth because Josh Stomalt can't throw strikes, and he's been great this year. And a bases are loaded, and Rosenthal comes in for what you would imagine is a five-out save, right? That's when you bring in a closer. You're going five-out save. This is a must-win, obviously. You want to hold on to this. That's why you bring in your closer at that spot in time. So Rosenthal comes in, and unbelievable. 6 pitches, 6 strikes, swings and misses. And he strikes out the two batters he faced with the base loaded, one out, gets out of the jam, and you're thinking, all right, Royals are in great shape. Then the Royals add 2 runs in the ninth. Whit Merrifield with a 2-run double on a misplay by the left fielder. It's 5-2, and now you're like, okay, we're in good shape. And Rosenthal's been great. So Rosenthal now has to come back out for the ninth, not something he's used to doing. He did have a 4-out save earlier in the year. Only threw 6 pitches in that eighth inning. Comes out in the ninth inning, and then things started to fall apart for the Royals. Rosenthal, 2 walks. Notice the word walks. A double. And that was sandwiched around 2 strikeouts. And the last guy he faced was a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball up and in. The guy swung and missed. So that put Rosenthal at 34 pitches. Now, the night before, Tuesday, Rosenthal threw 16 pitches. Today is an off day. So that's probably why they were bringing in Rosenthal, try to close it out. So Rosenthal was at 50 pitches in regards to the back-to-back nights. 34 last night. You're 1 out away from winning. The bases are loaded. You've extended him 34 pitches already. What's 1 more out? What's another 5 or 6 pitches? I mean, the bases are loaded. And so a base hit, it's 5-4. I can see going to somebody there because it's 5-2 at the time. Or, you know, he walks another guy. Bases loaded. It's 5-3. Okay, I could see that. But he finished with a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball, a swing and a miss. He just worked out a bases loaded jam in the eighth with 1 out. That wasn't his doing. And the ninth inning, Mike Matheny decides, okay, 34 pitches is just we can't go past that. And I'm confused. Because the way Mike Matheny said things after the first game of the year, when he pulled Danny Duffy after 65 pitches in the fifth inning, he said, every game is important. We're trying to win every game. So this is like saying you're going to go to the pool and jump off the diving board, the high diving board, and you get right to the edge, and you're just about ready to jump. And you're going to do a cannonball. That's what this is. You're going to do the cannonball, baby, right off that high diving board. And Matheny's like, all right, we're all in, baby. We're going to win this game. We're bringing in Rosenthal in the eighth. He jumps up into the air, about ready to do a cannonball off the high diving board. And then all of a sudden, the last second, oh, I'm all in. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. And that's what happened last night. Rosenthal got to the final out with the bases loaded, and your only option was Randy Rosario. And you decided you'd go with him. Here's Matheny explaining after the game, and I give Matheny credit for explaining, and I've got Cardinal fans telling me this is what we were telling you about, Royals fans, and I know Ned Yost made lots of mistakes too, and I'm not giving up on Mike Matheny because of this at all. I understand his logic. It's just not consistent logic. So Matheny says after the game, we talked to Rosenthal in the eighth. And by the way, Rosario came in, had a 1-2 count on Yadier Molina, hit him in the foot. That forced in a run, made it 5-3. Then he routed a 2-run single off the glove of Mikhail Franco, who could have made the play. Tough play, didn't make it. That tied the score at 5, and then Rosario promptly wild pitch, 2 more walks, as you heard the last one where he wasn't even close. And the Cardinals only needed 2 hits and a whole bunch of walks and a hit batter to score 4 in the ninth and win the game 6-5. But back to Rosenthal. Mike Matheny said, and I quote, "We talked to Rosenthal in the eighth, and we didn't have anyone else who could get us out of that mess. We talked to him ahead of time and told him, we're not going to make you get 5 outs here. What we need to do is use up your pitches and give us a chance. I'm not going to pitch you too far." Pretty impressive thing to get us out of the eighth. In the ninth, Matheny essentially was out of relievers other than Jesse Hahn, who pitched Tuesday night. Kyle Zimmers had command issues. Matheny opted for Rosario. Rosenthal was starting to hit a wall, Matheny said. He got to a number of pitches that we didn't feel safe anymore, and it's a shame. We're not going to sacrifice potential health of a player in a situation like that. And here's the rest of what Mike Matheny had to say about that tough loss last night.
It's a tough one. There's no doubt. We've had a number of them. We've talked about how hard it's been to come back late in the game, and this would have classified as that again, taking the lead late. And we've been extremely good at being able to put these away. But we had some extenuating circumstances that, you know, you just couldn't run through like we normally would do. We can't keep this up. You can't run them out there like we have been during this 17th straight. We're going to have different guys that are going to need to step into some roles that they might not be accustomed to.
Okay. So Matheny also said Rosenthal was starting to hit a wall. So you're hitting a wall when you're throwing 98, 99 and strike out the guy on the 34th pitch? You've hit a wall? That didn't look like you hit a wall to me.
Yeah.
Here's the other question I have. Is Matheny says, he told him, we're not asking to get 5 outs here. We talked about, let's get through the eighth inning. We didn't have anyone else. This is his quote, not mine. Mike Matheny said, and I quote, "We talked to Rosenthal in the eighth, and we didn't have anyone else who could get us out of that mess," end of quote. Eighth inning, bases loaded, 1 out. You bring in Rosenthal on back-to-back nights. He gets you out of the jam. Why did he start the ninth then?
Yeah.
Why did he start the ninth? If you knew he wasn't going to get the 5 outs, why?
It was probably the 6-pitch thing, I would
okay,
guess.
Okay, could be. Okay, but, fine. Fine. Yeah. Okay, so 6-pitch thing. That's fine. That's one way to answer that.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm cool with that. But then let's go back to what he said. We didn't have anyone else who could get us out of that mess. Eighth inning, 1 out, bases loaded. You're up 3-2. Fast forward ninth inning, Rosenthal makes his own mess. Bases loaded, 2 outs, up 5-2. Apparently, Rosario's the one to get you out of the mess and not Rosenthal. That's my problem.
Yeah,
you said that, he was the only one. He said in the eighth inning, we didn't have anyone else who could get us out of that mess, up 3-2. But in the ninth inning, with 2 outs and the bases loaded, he decided we do now suddenly have somebody get us out of the ninth inning mess. And by the way, trying to close a game in the ninth inning is different than the eighth or the seventh. It is completely different. Oh, Rosario, you could tell, was puckering up. You could see it.
Yeah,
it was a train wreck waiting to happen. I knew it when he came in. I was like, this is not good. And then when he hit Molina, I'm like, they're going to lose this game. And then I knew he was going to walk Wong. He was aiming, like Rex Hedler pointed out accurately. He was aiming the ball. Rosario wasn't comfortable because he's not used to being in that position.
Yeah.
So if that's the only option you had, I go back to, one, you shouldn't have gone to Rosenthal as soon as you did, even though that worked out in the eighth. Or I would argue, hey, you're up 5-2 going into the ninth. If you weren't going to let Rosenthal pitch 5 outs anyway, then don't have Rosenthal start the ninth. Let Rosario have a clean inning to start.
Yeah.
I don't get the logic. I thought every game was super important to win. Now he says the player's health is more important. If you're so worried about his player's health, why the heck did he go out to start the ninth? You're right. He probably didn't think that Rosie was going to go out there and throw 6 strikes and be done in the eighth. And that's probably what threw this whole thing out of kilter. That might have changed his thinking. But listen, this is the whole pitch count thing. Back in the older days of baseball, and I know I sound like a fuddy-duddy, in the 70s, 80s, even in the 90s, that doesn't happen. Rosenthal finishes
that.
Oh,
absolutely.
He at least gives up the tie, and then he gets pulled. I don't agree with Mike Matheny and what he did. I admire him for protecting the health of his player in this situation, but I could argue if he really cared about the health of his player, he wouldn't have pitched him on back-to-back nights in this situation. Up. Especially, I would say if he's worried about the health of his player, back-to-back nights, and you have now insurance runs in the top of the ninth, you're now up 5-2, why bring him back out for the ninth? Now, I say you bring him back to close the deal because he's your closer, and it's still a safe situation, but if you're really worried about his health, and you already chanced it by bringing him in the eighth, which, by the way, the eighth could have taken him 18, 20 pitches to get out of that. He got lucky that it was only six. Why are you pushing the envelope in the ninth? And then all of a sudden, you push the envelope so far. And like I said, it's jumping off a high diving board. You're all about going for the cannonball. You tell all your buddies, I'm doing this, baby. You jump in the air, and you're all full of conviction. All of a sudden, you're like, ah, and you just do a belly flop. You change your mind at the last second. That, to me, is not good managing. I don't think it's good managing. Yeah. I think you go down with your best. You brought in your best to get out of the eighth inning jam. You use your best to get out of the ninth inning jam, which is a jam he created, and he's proven he can get out of. So we're you had an off day today. You have an off day today. So what's another? I mean, it should have only taken him one more batter. Would have taken him 6-10 pitches. If the guy really, really battles and fouls off pitches, you're looking at probably anywhere from 1-10 more pitches. I mean, just basically say this is his last batter.
Yeah.
If you want to look at it that way, he just struck out a guy on a 98 mile an hour fastball, but he had hit the wall apparently, because pitch 35 is going to be completely different than pitch 34. This is the micromanaging of baseball sometimes that irritates me, at a peewee level, at a high school baseball level. I totally understand protecting the health and the arms of the players. I get that. And you don't want to overuse him at a younger age. And I'm not saying you should overuse Trevor Rosenthal either. But when you say in one breath, he's the only guy to get us out of the jam in the eighth. He's the only guy that can do that for us. And you pitched him the night before, and you're worried about his pitch count. And then you put him right back out there in the ninth. And then you let him get up to 34 pitches. Here's another thing. If he's so worried about Rosenthal's health, why do you let it get to where the bases are loaded? And then put horrible pressure on the reliever coming in. I think that's a horrible spot to put any pitcher in at any level, is coming in with the bases loaded with zero outs, one out, two outs, whatever the case may be. And that's what happened. Yeah. The bases were loaded with two outs, and Rosario comes into the game. That's not putting your reliever in a good spot.
No.
So to me, Matheny made so many mistakes in this situation. One, don't put out Rosenthal in the ninth if you're worried about his health, or don't bring him in at all in the eighth. Okay, you get through the eighth, don't bring him in to start the ninth. And once you start in the ninth, then already have a plan in your head and say, hey, if two runners get on, he's done. And by the way, he walked two people, so his control wasn't great. So another reason why you should have pulled him before the bases were loaded. That way Rosario has an open base to deal with. I just thought it was really bad.
Yeah,
really bad.
I don't disagree at all.
And let's go back, and it's a devastating, crushing loss for the Royals. Now they get off day, and they got a stew on it. And that's the other thing. You had an off day. What's another few pitches if you went that far with Rosenthal? And here's one more thing to think about, and this is an example of how things domino out of control. You know what all started this problem last night for the Royals? In the eighth inning, Josh Domont faced the first batter, and it was a fly ball catchable in right center field, and Hunter Dozier completely misread the ball, took a step back, came in, dove, couldn't come up with it. Hit his glove, still dropped it. Could have easily been an error. Didn't call it an error. Wasn't an easy play. Should have been an easy play.
Mm-hmm.
And Dozier, not, you know, a super experienced outfielder at the big league level, but still, he made a defensive error. They called it a hit, but that was an error. And guess what that did? Should have been one out, nobody on. Instead, there's a runner on. Now Stomont walks two guys. Now the bases are loaded. Now you're forced to go to Rosenthal. If Dozier makes that play, that inning's completely different. And Rosenthal probably didn't come in the eighth inning, and he probably comes in the ninth. Or maybe Rosario comes in to start the ninth up three, and then Rosenthal puts out the fire. So you see how that can hurt a manager, too, when a guy that's supposed to make a play. And by the way, if Franco makes the play at third, which was not easy at all, that was a hot shot. But if he keeps that in front of him, maybe they still win. I don't think they do. Rosario was a train wreck, but that was one of the worst ninth innings I've ever seen. And it's crazy because the Royals bullpen has been lights out this year. And I know you can say, well, you know, they're not perfect. They're gonna blow one every once in a while. Last night was one that could have been avoided, in my opinion, and it was mismanaged and mishandled. And that's why Cardinal fans are telling me today, told you. That doesn't mean I'm going to fire Matheny, okay? This team's not good enough to make the playoffs anyway. It's just frustrating that that's how it was handled, because to me, he's using logic, but it's inconsistent logic. And I'm not saying I want to be the manager of the Royals. But I do believe in that situation, if I'm all worried about his health and he gets out of that jam in the eighth, he's not coming back in the ninth. And if he is, he definitely isn't going to load the bases. I'm going to pull him before the bases are full, especially when I have not many options in the bullpen. To me, it's put all your chips in and go with it, or don't even put your chips in at all. Mm-hmm. That's the problem I have with it.
No, I don't disagree with that at all. I feel like that probably did mess up his,
I think you're right,
his six pitches in the eighth. He through it so quick.
That's the minimum he had to throw to get two outs with six pitches.
Exactly.
Well, I guess two pitches get ground ball. But
yeah. And it's just like, wow. What do I do now? He got through that too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Do I bring him back out? Do I save him? What do I do? And I'm guessing at least that was part of what went through his mind in that situation. So, but I agree. If you're going to roll, just roll. Let him at least try. He just got a strikeout, you know,
right.
Like try to get one more out. And then if it doesn't work, then you get a Rosario.
I think when you get to the point where the bases are loaded and you left him in there with one out, and then he got a strikeout, why not? It's like, once again, with the bases loaded, when he loaded the bases, you could have argued to pull him out with one out. So keep him in there, strike out a pinch hitter, who, by the way, was a left-handed pinch hitter, and he had Rosario, a left-hander in the bullpen. You could have really argued in hindsight, why the heck didn't Rosario come in with one out and the bases loaded if you're worried about Rosenthal? But then you go halfway, and you let him strike out the guy, and then all of a sudden, and by the way, there's another wild card to this. Yadier Molina and Rosenthal, good buddies. And that's who Molina was going to face, was Rosenthal. And Matheny was the manager of both Molina and Rosenthal in St. Louis. You almost have to sit here and wonder if he didn't want Rosenthal to face Molina. And I hope to goodness that wasn't a big part of his decision. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But they're good buddies, and they were laughing. And Molina was like, all right, I'm going to face Rosenthal. And then all of a sudden, Matheny says, no, you're not. And Rosenthal kind of laughed as he left the game. And Molina's like, okay, there'll be another time I get you. And that would have been right-hander versus right-hander as well.
Mm.
Instead, you went with a lefty versus a right-handed hitter. And you kept Rosenthal a righty against a lefty. And then a right-handed hitter comes to the plate with two outs, bases loaded, and go to a lefty. I just don't see. I would be a horrible manager. Mike Matheny's much better than I am as a manager. I don't want his job. I know it's easy to criticize 2020. Hindsight's 2020. And I've always said this. If you're going to criticize a manager, don't criticize him after the fact in regards to you had no idea how you would have handled that. When you're watching the game, if you're already making the decisions in your head or out loud to your people around you, you're basically managing the game for your Barca Lounger. I know that sounds silly, but you're at least making the decisions in your mind as if you're the manager in live time. And I was saying last night, Rosenthal finishes the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you take out your best weapon, who's been working out of these jams before. You have the bases loaded, two outs, you're up 5-2, you finish the game. What's another four or five pitches? Or at least get one more batter, and if that ends up tying the game, so be it. But you don't stop there. I wasn't saying this after the fact. I was screaming it. I think deep down he probably knows he messed up. And managers are human. And I hate to be too critical of managers. It's just that when you say every game is so, so, so important, and then you stop short at 34 pitches, which was a magical number apparently, after he just blew away a guy with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and you tell me he's hit the wall, I have a hard time buying that.
Yes.
And as a result, you lost the game. Now, you left Rosenthal in, pitched 35, could have been a home run grand slam, and you know what people would say after the fact, and this is where I think is unfair, why didn't you bring in Rosario? Rosenthal obviously hit the wall. Now, see, that's the type of criticism I think is ludicrous. But the criticism of while you're calling this thing, that I think is more fair. Once again, I don't want the job. Well, I mean, it pays well. Maybe I do.
Well, yeah.
But that was one that I think a lot of people can easily second guess.
Yeah.
Wow. What a horrible way to lose.
I saw the ending of it on highlights and stuff. I wasn't watching it live, so I didn't see that. I didn't actually see the eighth inning part of it. But,
eighth inning got out of the jam. Ninth
not
inning,
good.
Don't let him get out of the jam. Okay,
yeah.
Whatever. All right, the Kansas Volleyball Association rankings. By the way, the Royals are off today. 12-19 now in the season. They're 7.5 games out of first. They play the White Sox, who are a half game out of first. White Sox red hot, 19-12. Danny Duffy on the hill Friday for the Royals in Chicago. Once again, they have today off, and they have to stew on that tough loss. All right, KVA rankings, Dusty?
Yeah, we have two area teams that are in those rankings to start the season. And, again, 1A has been split again to two divisions. So St. John's Tipton is number 10 in 1A Division 1 to start the season. Top teams in 1A, Central Plains, 1A Division 2, the number one team in Rural Vista is number one in 1A Division 1. And then in 2A, first ranking is Valley Heights. And then Beloit is ranked ninth in the 3A rankings to start the season here in 2020. Royal Valley ranked number one. Also from the MCL, TMP, and Phillipsburg are ranked 4 and 5. So, again, Beloit number 9 to start the season in the Class 3A rankings here. You can find those full rankings at ncksports.com.
All right, coming up in a little bit, in about 10 minutes, we will address the NBA players boycotting playoff games. We'll give you the latest information on all that, how it's trickled down to affect other sports franchises and organizations and leagues, and whether it may impact the NFL and impact the Chiefs season opener. Yeah, I'm looking that far ahead. That's only, 14 days away, 2 weeks from today. The NFL season opens with the Chiefs against the Texans. We'll tell you how all this could impact that game and hear from a Chiefs player about this whole situation. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. But first, Brandy Paul, head coach of the Lady Trojans, Lady Trojans state runner-up last year in Class 3A, and expectations are high. They are now one of those teams with a X on their back, because they've been to state multiple times here recently, had a lot of success, and Dusty had a chance to catch up with Coach Paul. Here's that interview on the Ticket.
Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, as we're joined now by Brandy Paul, the head coach of the Beloit Trojan volleyball team. Coach, coming off of a season last year where you went into the state championship game and finished as a state runner-up there in 2019 with a 41-4 record. Clearly, it'll be a different-looking team with some of your leaders this season. But first, if you can, tell me how things are going so far this year for you as far as practices are concerned. A little bit different, as you didn't get to really do any summer ball, but you're back into the gym and practicing now. How is everything going so far?
Everything's going great. The girls were excited to get to play. We have one returning with experience, but I've been talking to the girls. Our advantage is this: most of my players are seniors and juniors. They were the JV team that we competed against daily last year. And so they competed against that runner-up team every day last year. So I think they have an advantage with that to be ready. And especially with losing the summer, we usually play half a season in the summer between tournaments and summer league, and so I get to see some teams around and kind of gauge where we're at, where we didn't get to do that this summer. But like we talked about, we're all in the same boat. The practice is going good. It's just now we're getting to that point where we do need a game so we can gauge, where we're at, what we need to do. But I feel like we're getting better every day. And, this season will be different in the outlook that without having the summer, usually I have rotations figured out by the summer because I've seen the things in the summer where I haven't yet this year. But, we may be making changes halfway through the year and developing more as the season goes. But I feel like the girls have a great attitude and they're ready to roll, and, we'll take anything we can get.
As you said, kind of an inexperienced group, though, that you do know that those players were going against some of the best players really in the state last year that graduated as seniors. You had six of those seniors that you had last year that were all league in some sort, but you do return Mackenzie Travis there. As you said, you're one returning starter. She'll be a junior this year. How much are you going to rely on her to maybe help fill and move forward without those six others that were all league performers last year?
Oh, well, we'll rely on her absolutely a lot. I'm going back to a 5-1, so she's going to be our setter. So she's leading this team. I like my 6-2 that I play, but I feel we have one of the best setters in the area with Mackenzie, if not the state, returning. And so I'm going to utilize her all, where she has her hands on the balls every play. So that'll be huge. And these girls, their chemistry, they just get along, and they're all leaders. The juniors that are from last year that were on JV that are seniors this year, they're great leaders, and I like the chemistry I'm seeing in the gym.
When you look at this team and do stack it up, then I know every year, you know, you built up a program that's tradition rich now there at Beloit. But what are your expectations now that you have seen them on the court this year as you get prepped for that first match coming up here shortly?
You know, that's where I go back to my summer because I really don't know.
Exactly.
And, you know, and even our practices have been a little different. They're going up against each other, and we're not so much scrimmaging. I'm trying to keep the courts, you know, separated. Mm-hmm. So we don't have so many girls on one court and kind of keeping my varsity away on one court and not interacting too much with the other teams, which is we don't do that. We usually play all of the teams. We scrimmage a lot. And drilled a lot with different kids, and we're just not mixing them kids this year. So really, I'm anxious for Thursday. That'll really give me, you know, a plan of where to go and where we're at. I think we're in a good spot as the week has gone on this week. You know, I say that, I think I have my rotations figured out, and then the next day something changes and it doesn't look right. So really, I'm just waiting for that game and see where we're at and see, you know, how kids are going to react on the court. Because it's a totally different ball game from going from junior varsity or, you know, I have a freshman coming in that's going to play for us, coming from junior high to varsity.
Mm-hmm.
So you need that game under your belt to just see how kids are going to react and how they're going to play. And so I'm just looking forward to it, and we'll adjust and adapt as, you know, each week that we play. And next week we're looking, we'll go to Ellsworth, and Ellsworth always has a strong program. They didn't graduate as many as us, so and they'll be very competitive. And then Ellenwood, I think they're already in the preseason rankings for 2A, fourth or fifth. So they bring back a strong team. So it'll give us a good gauge of where we're at and where we need to go.
You just brought up the rankings. You guys came; those came out by the Kansas Volleyball Association on Wednesday. You guys check in at number 9 in the 3A rankings to start the season. I know you don't put a lot of stock into that because you want to get your team going. But on the flip side of that, though, when you're always in those rankings and now that you're going, do you feel that you guys have more of a target on your back now that you've had success? You finished second at state last year and coming into this year, do you feel that, or do you just try to stay away from it?
And we've noticed that, and we don't talk about rankings. Not even last year. I tell the girls, don't look at them. Don't, you know, it really doesn't matter. You have to show up and you have to play your game and anything can happen. But, yes, I think it does put a target on our back in the last few years, just how the, you know, we get noticed as a program that, and with league play, it always seems that everybody plays their best game against us. And, you know, you'll even talk to their fans or their coach and they'll say, wow, that's the best we've played all year. So, I think people get fired up to play us. Because, you know, if they can beat us, you know, it says something for their program. So I do think we have that target on our back, and we do talk about that with the kids. Be ready, because they're going to play their best game against us. They're going to be fired up. And we mentally have to have that mental toughness and be ready for it. So, I think we have to be ready this year because, you know, I think a lot of people are thinking because we graduated all our team but one that this is the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've talked to my kids. I don't want to rebuild. We're reloading. So I hope they go out there and prove themselves. They're looking really good, and I have a positive outlook for the season.
You talked earlier about how the fact that you're not scrimmaging like you normally do, and that's a result of all the protocols probably with the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the biggest challenge for you as a coach dealing with the pandemic and trying to be able to do the things normally that you like to do and having to change things up?
I think that's it. It's just not – we're not having as many kids on the court. And for, you know, a lot of drills, I need a few more, and I'm really trying to keep – you know, my 8 to 12 that will be suiting up for varsity on one court for most of the time. And I think the hardest for me seeing that is typically, like last year, this JV team that'll, you know, most of them will be my varsity this year, played against that varsity group day in, day out. We were all on the same court. We girls went against each other. We scrimmaged against each other. And so I feel bad for my JV because they're not getting pushed as much as I feel they need to be for next year, just because we're keeping that separation, you know, just in case someone got sick or whatever, trying to not get as many girls quarantined or, you know, whatever would happen, but we're exposed, I guess. So I think that's been the toughest for me, is not getting, you know, that varsity and JV group against each other as much as I would like to, just, you know, building that program. And I'm scared I'm going to see that, you know, disadvantage next year, because they're not getting that experience against that higher level team in practice.
Obviously, different times that we're living in right now as we get ready for the 2020 volleyball season. Coach Brandy Paul, the Beloit Lady Trojans, we certainly thank you for taking the time, and best of luck as you open out the season, and hope things go well for you in 2020.
All right, thank you.
Once again, that is Beloit Trojan head volleyball coach Brandy Paul. If you missed that interview, it'll be posted here later this morning at our podcast page, katycountry94.com. Go to the Sports Ticket podcast, and you can pull up that interview and interviews we had this week with Steve Tiernan, Osborne head football coach, Jason Carr, co-head coach of the St. John's Tipton volleyball team, and Brad Gober, head football coach of the Beloit Trojans. All of those are posted there for you to go check out later on. All right, the big news in sports yesterday, the NBA announcing that all three playoff games for Wednesday yesterday would not take place, postponed, and would be rescheduled. The decision came after the Milwaukee Bucks players did not take the court for Game 5 of the first-round series against the Orlando Magic, which was supposed to tip off yesterday at 3 o'clock. The protest comes in response to the shooting of an unarmed black man named Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, on Sunday. Shortly after the Bucks made a statement by not playing, the Rockets and Thunder decided to also not play yesterday, as well as the Lakers and the Trailblazers. The Milwaukee Bucks team came out with this statement, and the two voices you'll hear are player Sterling Brown and George Hill.
The past 4 months have shed a light on the ongoing racial injustices facing our African-American community. Citizens around the country have used their voices and platforms to speak out against these wrongdoings. Over the last few days in our home state of Wisconsin, we've seen the horrendous video of Jacob Blake being shot in the back 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, and the additional shooting of protesters. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action, so our focus today cannot be on basketball.
When we take the court and represent Milwaukee and Wisconsin, we are expected to play at a high level, give maximum effort, and hold each other accountable. We hold ourselves to that standard, and in this moment, we are demanding the same from lawmakers and law enforcement. We are calling for justice for Jacob Blake and demand the officers be held accountable. For this to occur, it is imperative for the Wisconsin State Legislature to reconvene after months of inaction and take up meaningful measures to address issues of police accountability, brutality, and criminal justice reform. We encourage all citizens to educate themselves, take peaceful and responsible action, and remember to vote on November 3rd on behalf of the Milwaukee Bucks.
That's from Sterling Brown and George Hill and the entire Milwaukee Bucks basketball team. The ownership group of Milwaukee Bucks released a statement as well. We fully support our players and the decision they made. Although we did not know beforehand, we would have wholeheartedly agreed with them. The only way to bring about change is to shine a light on the radical injustices that are happening in front of us. Our players have done that, and we will continue to stand alongside them and demand accountability and change. News of the Bucks walking out sent a ripple effect across sports in the United States throughout the day yesterday. As we mentioned, all three playoff games were postponed in the NBA because teams had agreed that they weren't going to play. No team accepted a forfeit, which was possible. If the Magic stayed on the court, they could have got a forfeit. Instead, they said, no, we support our brothers, the Milwaukee Bucks. Although, more on that coming up in a moment as to how that all transpired and the Bucks did what they did without other teams knowing what their plans were. That has some people upset. The Major League Soccer, they decided not to play for their games yesterday. The Brewers, Reds, Dodgers, Giants, and Padres, Mariners baseball games last night, they were postponed because the teams didn't feel comfortable playing under what's going on, and they followed the lead of the Bucks and the NBA. And there were also individual players. Maybe the teams kept on playing, but players individually, like Dexter Fowler of the Cardinals, decided not to play last night. That was his choice, but the Cardinals went on and played, as we know, against the Royals, as we talked about. And the WNBA, they were planning on having games and planning on having some kind of symbolic gesture, and then decided we're not going to play. Here is the statement from Elizabeth Williams, a player in the WNBA.
After speaking with representatives from teams playing tonight, as well as our WNBPA leadership, the consensus is to not play in tonight's slate of games and to kneel, lock arms, and raise fists during the national anthem. We stand in solidarity with our brothers in the NBA and will continue this conversation with our brothers and sisters across all leagues and look to take collective action. What we have seen over the last few months, and most recently with the brutal police shooting of Jacob Blake, is overwhelming. And while we hurt for Jacob and his community, we also have an opportunity to keep the focus on the issues and demand change. These moments are why it's important for our fans to stay focused, hear our voices, know our hearts, and connect the dots from what we say to what we do. We encourage everyone to go and register to vote now, today. If you truly believe that Black Lives Matter, then vote. Go and complete the 2020 census now. Don't wait. If we wait, we don't make change. It matters. Your voice matters. Your vote matters. Do all you can to demand that your leaders stop with the empty words and do something. This is the reason for the 2020 season. It is in our DNA. We have been saying her name. We are lifting the names of Black and brown women whose murders have been forgotten. We will continue to use our platform to speak of these injustices that are still happening and demand action for change. Black Lives Matter, say her name, say his name. Tonight, we stand, and while we have heavy hearts, we stand with strong and determined voices and ask all our fans to vote, to engage, and to make that difference.
So that was from Elizabeth Williams on behalf of the WNBA. Many NBA players and coaches have spoken with heavy hearts since the shooting of Jacob Blake, and earlier yesterday, the Toronto Raptors discussed the possibility of sitting out game one of their second round matchup against the Boston Celtics. Coaches like Doc Rivers have given emotional statements in response to the shooting of Blake, stating poignantly that we keep loving this country and this country doesn't love us back, was a quote from Doc Rivers. Raptors guard Fred VanVleet, of course, a former Wichita State Shocker, told the media on Tuesday that in order to bring change, players would have to put something up to lose rather than just money or visibility. By sitting out games, that certainly makes a statement that the players are sick and tired of nothing changing in regard to police brutality against Black people in this country. The NFL has also jumped in. The Lions canceled their practice here recently, and the Jaguars and Colts apparently have canceled practices today.
Washington football team and Packers, I just saw too.
There's two more. Yeah. Now, the Chiefs are on the practice field as we speak. The players had a meeting in the bubble last night in Orlando. There was talk of leaving the bubble. Reports are LeBron and the Lakers, along with the Clippers, indicated they didn't want to continue with the NBA playoffs. To open the emotional meeting, players spoke with the family of Jacob Blake, the Kenosha, Wisconsin man who was shot 7 times in the back by police on Sunday. As of now, there are no concrete plans moving forward, but at the minimum, it appears that Thursday's playoff games, which are today, will be postponed. LeBron James reportedly led the Lakers and Clippers out of the room, while Miami Heat veteran Udonis Haslem argued that the season could not go on without the Lakers and the Clippers. The meeting ended ugly, according to other sources. Haslem shared the sentiment that many others were likely thinking after the Lakers and Clippers left the meeting. Without the two big market championship favorites, the season could not realistically resume. In other words, no LeBron, no season. What exactly the league would need to offer in order to sway LeBron remains unclear, but what we can say for certain is that token gestures are no longer enough, according to the players and what they did yesterday. Putting a social justice message on the back of a jersey and Black Lives Matter on the court will not be enough. NBA owners and their business partners are among the most powerful people in America. If they want to continue making money off of the players or LeBron James or whoever it might be, they'll have to take real action in support of the causes he and other players believe in. Kenny Smith, former NBA basketball player. He is very good on Inside the NBA on TNT. He walked off the set of Inside the NBA in solidarity with the players' boycott. He said very nicely and politely, and I quote, "As a Black man and as a former NBA player, I think it's best for me to support the players and just not be here tonight." So he walked off the set in solidarity for the players. This is latest information coming out 10 minutes ago from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. Several key members of the Lakers and some peers around the league stayed up until early a.m. hours talking through issues in the bubble. Among key players in league heading into 11 a.m. meeting, there's optimism about a majority of players wanting to continue the playoffs. We'll get to more of that here in a moment. Chris Webber, who's a TNT analyst and a former NBA player, he had this, you could feel the emotion as he talked about the situation.
There's no change tomorrow. We know vote. We keep hearing vote. Everybody vote. But I'm here to speak for those that are always marginalized. Those that live in these neighborhoods where we preach and tell them to vote and walk away. Charles Barkley came to my high school. Just seeing him in the locker room, seeing his hands and his body, that inspired me. You can't see something. You can't be something until you see it. And when I tell you the little kids that have called me upset, I have a godson that has autism, and I just had to explain to him why we aren't playing. I have young nephews that I've had to talk to about death before they've even seen it in a movie. If not now, when? If not during a pandemic and countless lives being lost, if not now, when? That's all I just want to hear from the rest of the night, where everybody's pontificating and thinking and soapboxing and all of that. We know nothing is going to change. We get it. If Martin Luther King got shot and risked his life, Mega Evers, if we've seen this and all of our heroes constantly taken down, we understand it's not going to end. But that does not mean, young men, that you don't do anything. Don't listen to these people telling you don't do anything, because it's not going to end right away. You are starting something for the next generation and the next generation to take over. Do you have to be smart? Yes. Do you have to make sure that you have a plan? Yes. Do you have to be articulate about that plan? Yes. All of those things. But that's what you're going to do. They're professionals. They know how to be the best of themselves. And so I applaud it. I applaud it because it is the young people. It is the young people leading the way. And I applaud them.
One little political note to pass along to you here. The senior advisor to the president, which would be Jared Kushner, his father-in-law, is Donald Trump. Jared Kushner put out there on CNBC today, he said, and I quote, NBA players are very fortunate that they have the financial position where they're able to take a night off from work without having to have the consequences to themselves financially. End of quote. Then he went on to say that he would reach out to LeBron James. How do you think that conversation is going to go? I don't think LeBron's going to even want to talk to Jared Kushner. I will say this. Here is where you can tell this is working to an extent, because you've got people saying things and talking about it.
Yeah.
High-ranking political officials like Jared Kushner are talking about it. So it's you've got the attention of the nation. Whether or not people agree with the boycott or not, you have their attention, certainly to an extent. And so now the question is, do you have the right people's attention? Do you have the lawmakers' attention? Do you have the mayors, the governors, the senators, the congressmen, the police chiefs, the police unions? Do you have the right people paying attention and being receptive or open to having a dialogue? That's where it starts. You've got to have a dialogue. And even if Jared Kushner, you know, he said what he said there, and LeBron doesn't like it, it probably would behoove LeBron to at least take the phone call from Jared Kushner and talk, and it may end in 10 seconds. It may last 10 minutes. But there has to be a dialogue for anything to change in this country. No matter what you want to change, there has to be a dialogue. There has to be two people or two sides listening to one another to create change. And if two sides are going to get together and then yell at each other and not listen to each other, then it's a waste of time. Both the union and NBA ownership are now determining what to do about the remainder of the season. The league's board of governors will meet this morning to discuss next steps, and the players already met Wednesday evening, are going to do again at the same time today. While the ultimate solution remains unknowable, the atmosphere of Wednesday's meeting was described to multiple reporters as very emotional, in some cases heated. Given the frustration over the Milwaukee Bucks' more sudden decision, whatever is decided today or beyond will likely be measured and come out as something resembling a consensus from the reunion. So here, or from the union, what you have now is the union has to get on the same page. Yeah. It's as simple as that. They have to get on the same page. It is not going to look good if the Lakers and Clippers don't want to play, but every other team says they do, and that's what the reports are, which whether they're accurate or not, I don't know. If LeBron and Lakers say we're taking our ball and we're going home and getting out of the bubble, and Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and the Clippers say the same thing, those are arguably the two best teams in the NBA. You take them out of the equation and you play the rest of the playoffs, you have a gigantic asterisk. We've talked about whether there should be an asterisk or not. There'd be a gigantic asterisk. I don't think you can move forward with two teams saying we're out and the 28 others say we're in. Well, not the other 28 others, but the remaining playoff teams. I don't think you can do that. I think it's pretty much you got to get everybody on the same page. And if you can't get everybody on the same page, then there will be no games, and the season's over.
Yeah.
Or you get everybody on the same page, and they agree, we're done, and we're leaving the bubble. Or you get everybody on the same page, and you convince the Lakers and Clippers, hey, we all want to play. Let's do what the majority wants to do. Suck it up if you can. We'll be willing to help in any which way to help with your causes. And we agree with you on many instances in this situation, but we just don't agree with giving up on the playoffs when we're in the middle of the first round and going in the second round of the playoffs. We've worked, we've sacrificed being in this bubble and doing this and doing that, and now all of a sudden we're going to blow it up. But LeBron, and not just LeBron, there's other players too. LeBron is kind of the leader, of course, but LeBron and others in the NBA, Jaylen Brown's one that's spoken out, says, I want to go protest. He'd leave the bubble right now to go be in his community and protest or try to do something to impact change. And there are players in the NBA, no matter what team, and there might be three on a team and 12 others that are like kind of indifferent or, yeah, I could see it either way. And you probably got a few on every team saying, dude, if it was totally my call, I just would be, we're done. Basketball is not important. I want to go be in my community. I want to be with my family. I want to talk to my kids about this. I want to try to go talk to lawmakers personally instead of this or that. And that's their right and prerogative to do that. And if they did leave the bubble, and that's the next question, what if the teams can't get on the same page? What if LeBron says, you know what, I'm out? And what if Kawhi Leonard said that? And what if Jaylen Brown says that? Jaylen Brown's a pretty important part of the Boston Celtics. Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors, who are going for back-to-back championships. These guys are giving up something. The Lakers and the Clippers and the Raptors and the Bucks, who started this thing yesterday because this happened 20 miles south of Milwaukee, this shooting of Jacob Blake. All of these teams, I just mentioned, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Raptors, and the Bucks are at the forefront of this, and those are the four best teams in the NBA. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
Well, no.
I mean, Milwaukee obviously is tied to the shooting.
Yeah.
But Milwaukee and Toronto, the top two teams in the East, the Lakers, Clippers, top two teams in the West. If those four teams, if players from every one of those teams decide, I'm out, and the NBA says, we're going to move forward with whoever wants to stay and play. And so you have enough players on every team to continue to move on and play that's still alive in the playoffs. But now you move forward with the Lakers versus the Trailblazers, and there's no Damian Lillard and no LeBron James, no Anthony Davis. You move on with the Clippers and the Mavericks, and there's no Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. You move on with the Raptors and the Celtics. You're going to play each other, and there's no Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, or Fred VanVleet. Is that real playoffs?
No.
It isn't. So the players now have to figure out what they want to do. Where do they go forward? I put on Twitter yesterday, and I could be wrong. I don't know how you can just boycott one day. If you just boycott one game in one day, and then you go back and play today or tomorrow, I think it shows you're not really standing up for anything per se. You did it, and now you're going back to business as usual. I don't know if the players fully thought this out. And by the way, that's why people are upset with the Bucks. The rest of the NBA is upset with the Milwaukee Bucks. Is because the Bucks made this decision, apparently, shortly before the game. They talked about this for a while in the locker room, and they decided we're not going to go out there. And the rest of the league didn't know this. The Magic didn't know this. And as a result, the Bucks did something that other people were talking about. The whole league and teams didn't agree on it. The Bucks decided to do it. And I commend the Bucks for doing what they did, and they thought about it, and as a team, they voted to do that. I totally get that and understand it. But what they did now is they put their league in a bad spot from this perspective. You don't have solidarity. Because if you did, the bubble would be done and the playoffs would be over. If you had solidarity, the season's over right now, wouldn't it? If you had complete solidarity, this season would be over.
Yeah.
It's clearly not. So all these other teams and players are kind of caught off guard a little bit because they probably figured if anybody's going to boycott, we're going to know ahead of time. We're going to take a league-wide vote perhaps, you know, get all the players in the bubble, have a meeting, and then decide whether to boycott. But the Bucks took that out of the hands of the rest of the teams by doing what they did. And I'm not saying what the Bucks did was wrong, but I think the other teams are saying the same thing. We support you in what you did, but now we have to scramble to put together our game plan. And as a result of you doing what you did yesterday, now if we decide we weren't really on board with boycotting yesterday, we wanted to play, you know, or this or that, and now we're stuck in a rock between a hard place because we want to support you, but we want to continue playing, and you've kind of taken away that option for us in a way, because now the league looks bad. We, as a collective players union, don't look like we're united if we say we want to play, because you already made that decision for us. And I get that from the rest of the league, and I get that from the rest of the teams. I mean, if you're a player and you really want to win a championship, and this might be your chance, if you're a player that's, you know, needs the money more than LeBron James does, or more than George Hill does, then it makes sense that you want to play. Maybe you're not as big on the cause as other people are, and I can guarantee you that's the case. Because you've got black and white men playing basketball, and I'm saying there's white guys that are supporting this. And I'll bet you there's some white guys that are not in support of this, but they're being quiet. And I'll bet you there are black men that are for this. And I'll bet you there are black players that are not for the way this was handled and would rather play. So are you going to have just a vote? And, you know, okay, there's 500 basketball players. I have no idea how many there'd be in there. It'd be a couple hundred probably now. And take a vote. And if it's, you know, 101 to 99 in favor of playing, then you play. Or if it's 101 to 99, you're going to just, and you say you're not going to play, then that kills it for the 99 that want to play. The Bucks did put the league in a tough spot. I understand where they're coming from. I give them credit for standing up for what they believe in. I give credit to anybody with any cause for standing up for what you believe in a peaceful way. So I'm not going to get on a political argument here as to should the Bucks be doing what they're doing. Should LeBron and the Lakers and the Clippers say they shouldn't play? That's up to them. That's up to them. When people come out here as fans and say, start bagging on the players because they're selfish and want to watch basketball, there are things in life that are bigger than basketball, and they're right about that. When they say that, when athletes say that, they're right. There is. Here's a question I have. Would these players and teams have done what they did if there were going to be fans for the games yesterday? Can you imagine how ticked off fans would be, even if they maybe supported the cause, if they paid money for a playoff ticket and the players didn't show up like yesterday in the Bucks and the Magic game? Imagine the Brewers and the Reds, 35,000 people show up at Milwaukee Brewer Park, and then all of a sudden are told. I mean, we know how upset people were at the Thunder game when the game was called when Gobert tested positive for the COVID-19. Mm. I mean, obviously, you're disappointed and upset and confused. Wouldn't you have been the same situation here? So if there's ever a time to boycott, this is probably the best time regard.
From all regards, yes, this COVID, is the season to boycott if you want to do it.
It's an asterisk already, according to people.
And I think a lot of what's going on from that aspect is being elevated. Is it like, people are heated because of everything that's been going on.
Sure.
And so that's helping, you know, elevate those frustrations and things like that. This is the time to do it, for sure. Just with everything that's going on.
Right. And the ratings are down right now, and I think part of that is you're not back in the flow of the NBA. It's in a bubble. There's not as much energy when you're watching, so forth and so on. So where do we go from here? The players are going to have to decide. I don't know how much input the commissioner is going to have in this situation.
Yeah.
I think this comes down to the players. They apparently told the coaches to leave last night so they could talk. And you know, Doc Rivers is very passionate about what he said the other day, and that was heartfelt, and he's the son of a cop. So Doc Rivers sees the whole, every angle covered. I guess the question now you have is what's next for sports? What's next for sports? I mean, baseball is going to go on. I think we're going to get back to, you know, not a big problem there. There might be some players individually going to sit out, like Mookie Betts might sit out another game for the Dodgers. Who knows? But it looks like we're going to move on with baseball. Soccer, I don't know. A black hockey player for the NHL said yesterday he was insulted by the league because the league acted like nothing happened. Nobody boycotted anything. So he's upset that the league didn't do anything, come out with a statement. So the NHL basically moved on like nothing happened. MLS didn't play yesterday. Were they going to resume today? I don't know. The WNBA, are they going to resume today? Or are they going to keep boycotting? I don't know. We still don't even know with the NBA. The next step would be the NFL is only 2 weeks away. The Chiefs and the Texans. We are seeing NFL teams. We mentioned five that are not practicing today. They've canceled practices because of this, kind of in a sign of solidarity with their brothers in the NBA. Tyrann Mathieu has been outspoken, and, of course, he's a guy that's all for change. And he, give him credit in regards to, you know, he's turned around his life. He had all kinds of problems in his life, and he turned around, helped lead the Chiefs to a Super Bowl. Tyrann Mathieu put on Twitter today or yesterday, fed up in capital letters. Ain't enough money in the world to keep overlooking true issues that affect the mind, body, and soul of what we do. We cannot be happy for self when our communities are suffering and innocent folk are dying. Since George Floyd, there have been at least 20 other police shootings, including the recent one, of course, the 7 bullets in the back of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Based on what you hear there, and based on what Andy Reid has been very supportive of his players, is it possible? I know that's 2 weeks away. Is it possible that we fought so hard to get through COVID-19 and get the NFL season up and going? Is it possible that the Texans decide not to get on a plane and come to Kansas City and both teams agree they're boycotting the season opener on Thursday, September 10th? You talk about a powerful message. It's the most lucrative, biggest sports entity in all of the United States of America. It is the most popular sport by far. And then you get all excited about finally going to have football because people want it so badly. And September 10th rolls around. And by the way, you've got 16,000 Chiefs fans now trying to buy tickets at $500 a pop maybe to watch a game with, you know, three-quarter of empty seats, which I think would take away from the experience. But if you want to pay the money, that's up to you. Because this situation, you would have fans in the stands. So I think that changes things just a little bit. Yeah. You got to think about that. You don't have that problem with the bubble. You don't have that problem with the baseball games now or whatever. What's next? And what about college football? You know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 made their decision. What if the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC have players on those teams and schools and say, we're going to boycott the first college game of the year? Isn't it interesting? I put it on Twitter yesterday. All along, we thought the biggest obstacle to stopping sports and stopping seasons was COVID.
Yeah.
Everybody would have said that. There wouldn't have been anybody that would have argued against that. And now, this is what might stop sports, or at least some sports. No NBA playoffs, possibly. No more WNBA, possibly. Is there going to be more boycotts of other games affecting college football down the line and pro football? The question is, what's next for sports? How is America going to take this? How are the fans going to take it? Is there going to be a huge drop in ratings because of these boycotts or these stances? Or is there going to be an uptick because people support the players? I will say this. People say, well, you know, they didn't give up anything yesterday because they're all making a lot of money. They are potentially giving up a lot, the players are, because they're giving up the chance of a championship, which is important to them. That's a sacrifice. They're also giving up money. They're also giving up risking TV contracts to go down in value if ratings go down, advertisers boycotting because they don't agree with the players, or it could go the other way. More advertisers jump on, and whatever the case may be. There is a risk. There is a potential sacrifice, and that's what Fred Van Fleet was saying the other day. I'm just reading between the lines what he said and paraphrasing. You know, we're doing all these things. We're saying these things. We're wearing the shirts. We got the logos. But at some point, we got to do more because nothing's changing. So what do you do? People I've seen on social media go, well, why are you boycotting? That's not going to do anything. No, it will do something. Here's why. What it can do if they stick with a boycott. If it's a one-day thing, I think it goes away pretty quickly. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. But if they stick to this for a little while at least. And by the way, are you going to stay in the bubble? If let's say the players decide we're going to boycott for a week, are you going to stay in the bubble not playing games? To me, if you're going to boycott for an extended period of time, the season's over. Why stay in a bubble? Go home and see your family and be done with this thing. So that I still think the NBA season is really in peril right now. But we'll see what happens with this meeting later this morning. Perhaps there's enough people to get everybody to play. And if so, great. If not, so be it. I'm going to tell you right now, I lived without NBA basketball for months. I can live without it again. And if they play, I'm going to watch. Whether I agree or disagree with this stance, I'm going to still watch because I'm a sports fan. I enjoy talent and outstanding skill. I'm going to watch it, the playoffs. If they don't play, I'm not going to lose any sleep that they don't. Okay? And I'm a big sports fan. You know that. So I'll move on to the next sport. Or if there's no sports and everything's done, guess what? There is more than life than sports. That is so true. What the players are saying, that is so true. So if you want to be an advocate and you want to use your platform in a way to impact change, this is getting the attention of lawmakers, hopefully in Wisconsin and Milwaukee and Kenosha and wherever it may be across the country. If you can get the attention of these people that have high power positions, whether it be your owners who you're sending a message to that are billionaires who have power, money is power in this country. We know it. When you have all that much money as owners and you have all that money, you have power in some regard and you have resources. You put the pressure on your owners. The owners may start doing more. If the owners do more, that puts pressure on perhaps your local governments, your state governments, your federal government, your city government, whatever it may be. or your local law enforcement agencies, or whatever the case may be. The key is you got to have dialogue. And right now, I think what the players have been saying is, we haven't had enough conversations. This isn't being paid attention to close enough. Nothing's really changing. We keep having these police shootings, and we are sick of it. We're tired of it. We demand change, and we're going to do whatever we can to demand change in a peaceful way. And that's what they're doing. This is very peaceful, what they're doing. And I've always heard people say, well, they shouldn't protest, blah, blah, blah. They shouldn't protest now because they're in the playoffs. They shouldn't protest now. They shouldn't protest then. It's what Chris Webber said. If not now, when? There's never a good time for a protest, according to certain people, no matter what. The reason there's a protest is because somebody disagrees with something and wants change. So you're never going to sit here and all go, oh, yeah, that's the perfect time to have a protest. People ain't going to agree on that. Nobody will. This country can't agree on anything. Yeah. We can't even agree on whether the earth is round. I mean, we can't agree on simple things like that. So I applaud the players for using their platform to do what they want to do. They have the right to do that. That's what's great about this country. They have the right to do that. Now, whether you agree with their stance, disagree with their stance, is really no different than Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the anthem. You either respected his right to do that, or you really, really got ticked off and you didn't like it and you swore off the NFL and you swore off the Niners and you swore off Kaepernick. You have the right to do all that too. That's what's great about this country. But the biggest thing to me, and I've said it over and over, is, and it applies to everything in this world today, especially in this country, is we have to be more open-minded and listen to both sides. We need to be objective. We need to open up the parameters and at least listen to what the other person or the other side is saying. Even if we don't really agree with the platform, we should at least listen to see what they have to say. And then we can start a dialogue. But screaming, yelling, and putting out names and ripping people that you've never met on social media is not helping this problem at all. And we've gotten to this point. You have to ask yourself this question. How in the world did we get to this point? Clearly, this country's been doing something wrong if we've gotten to this point. This isn't something that's just made up. We've gotten to this point. You know the last time an NBA game was boycotted? 1961. Bill Russell and the Celtics. Do you know what they boycotted? Why they boycotted? 1961, Dusty, which was 59 years ago. Do you know why Bill Russell boycotted 1961?
I guess it had something to do with civil rights.
Racial yes. injustice. The exact same thing we're dealing with almost 60 years later. Does that not put it in perspective? We say things have gotten better. Probably in some ways they have. In some ways they've gotten worse. I am a white male. I don't know what people are dealing with in the inner cities. I do not know what it feels like to be scared for your life when a cop pulls you over. I have no idea. I'm not going to act like I know. I can just try to imagine myself in that situation, and I wouldn't want to live my life in fear. And you know, it's funny. We talk about this, and I hear all these people, and they contradict themselves all the time. COVID-19. I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to live in fear. You got to live your life. And then you hear people talking about the movement in our country and about trying to fight social injustice and racial inequality and police brutality and whatever else. And then all of a sudden those people are like, that's just wrong. They shouldn't do that. Well, what they're saying is they don't want to live in fear either. Just like you just said, you don't want to live in fear. You want to live your life. Well, so do they. Mm-hmm. So do they. It is a complicated, super complicated issue to an extent, certainly in regards to all the moving parts. And so the players have made their voices heard. The question is anybody listening? The question is, will anything happen because of what they're doing? And if there isn't something that gets done because of all that they're doing, where does this lead down the line? Could it become where basically all athletes say, that's it, there's no sports for the whole year, deal with that? And some people say, fine, we'll deal with it. Life goes on, bigger than sports, as you said, use your own words against you. Or maybe these players are gonna be a bigger movement beyond what yesterday was, and we're going to have no NFL September 10th. And we're not going to have college football to start the year. And we're not going to have any NBA playoffs the rest of the season. And Major League Baseball may come to a point where they're saying, we're done. I don't know. Maybe we'll get to that point. I don't think we're going to go that far. I think there's too many players and too many people that are involved that got to support their families. And they've got other people affected that have jobs that aren't making millions of dollars yeah. that suddenly wouldn't have anything to do, as we've seen with the cutting of sports, cutting of staff by the Pac-12 yesterday. Tons of people laid off because there's no sports until at least January 1. I mean, it's a trickle-down effect. Whether you take a stance or you don't take a stance, people are affected by COVID-19. They're affected by players boycotting. There is a ramification. There's a ripple effect. And there's so many innocent people that get hurt in these things when people do mean well. And there's so many things to peel off in regards to all those layers. You know, Whit Merrifield came out with a statement, and I'm trying to scroll down here, and it's a long statement, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. But basically, Whit Merrifield said that the Royals, how they're handling the current climate with games not being played and other players and teams making statements. And here's what Whit Merrifield said, and we'll end with this unless Dusty wants to add something. Whit Merrifield says, and I quote, "We," I say we because I'm reflecting the guys that I've spoken to about this, and I haven't spoken to every single member on the team about it, but we feel what we do is a separation from what's all going on in the world for a lot of people. We feel like it's important for us to go out and do our job because it gives people a three-hour window to enjoy a baseball game and to not think about what else is going on in the world. These words from Whit Merrifield, Royals outfielder. Other teams might feel different, other players might feel different, and might want to make that statement. To me, and I hesitate to even speak on the subject just because I know who I am. I'm a straight white male, to be frank, and what I say on the subject doesn't hold a lot of weight, and a lot of times people don't want to hear it, but my opinion on the whole issue is that obviously we have stuff going on in the world that needs to be addressed. I don't necessarily agree with the way it is addressed a lot of the times, but I don't know what it's like to be a black man walking down the street. I also don't know what it's like to be a cop out there trying to protect those streets. What I do know is that there's evil in this world and there's good in this world. What I also know is that love brings on love and hate brings on hate. And unfortunately, we've got a little too much hate bringing on more hate, it seems, with everything going on. Those statements on Twitter from Whit Merrifield. I think he says it well.
Yep.
I think he says it well. And that's how I feel about it. I totally feel the same way in regards to, I don't know what it's like to be a black man walking down the street. I don't know what it's like to grow up as a young black kid, you know, in a tough neighborhood. I don't know what it's like to be a cop in a violent neighborhood. I don't know what it's like to be a cop always looking over your back. And I had somebody send me something yesterday that was very interesting, and I really appreciate the person sharing it. And I had somebody call that's a former officer yesterday after we talked as well. Let me start with the former officer. We brought this up yesterday on the show about there's always bad apples in any group. You don't want the bad apples to ruin the group. The rotten apples can, you know, rule the majority. And so we see the bad, horrible video of the George Floyd incident and Jacob Blake and many others, of course. All right? They're well documented. All right, we don't see all the perfectly run traffic stops involving a white cop and a black man. We don't see that, right?
Yeah.
We don't see those. And so we do know there's a lot of great cops out there. And we talked about it yesterday that Charles Barkley made a comment like, this is really smearing great cops out there. And the bad cops are, the bad apples are. And so you would think that the good cops and the really good cops are going to go ahead and start being more vocal and saying, listen, we got to get rid of these bad apples because this is really painting a horrible picture of our police department, even though 98% of us are great people. And Barkley made a good point. At the same time, we brought this up yesterday on the show, is that there are people that have tried that. And what happens is they don't have enough power, or they simply get pushed aside because they don't have any hierarchy, they don't have any power. And the people that do have the power at the top of a police union or a police station or whatever it might be, some of those people are great people and do the right thing. And some people are part of the problem and won't change. And this person called me yesterday, listened to our show, and he said, I'm a former police officer. I went to the higher-ups, my superiors, about a problem that I saw within our department, and he was, I believe, dismissed shortly thereafter, no longer a cop. And that person that he was talking about that was a problem has since become a chief of police. So it's easy for all of us to sit here and say, well, all the good cops need to demand the change too. If nobody listens and the people in power, and it's the same way here, if all of the players do everything they want to do, but the owners and people with a ton of money, and that's the owners, and law enforcement, and your city government, your federal government, your politicians, your congressmen, your senators, if they don't do anything or they don't listen, then all you did is voiced your opinion, which you have the right to do, but it fell on deaf ears. And I hope to God, anytime there are protests of these magnitudes, I hope people at least are able to listen, and hopefully there is some type of change. It might not be the change you really want. It may take a lot of time to institute that change. But that stood out to me when this person called saying, listen, I tried, and look where it got me. The other person that sent an email said, you know, this is really tough. Everybody focuses on, obviously, the shootings and the victims and their families, and there's no question that should be the focus. But he also pointed out that he knows friends that are police officers that are up at night now because now they're in situations where they are a target because of these bad apple cops. They are now targets for other people because there's so many people that are full of hate or full of madness and anger, and maybe rightfully so, when you see people of your own skin color being, you know, taken out by people of higher power. And now they're vulnerable. And now they're a little bit worried because they got families to go home to, too. See, what's lost in this whole thing, as we said yesterday, is everybody is a human being. And many, pretty much everybody has family members still to worry about, whether you're black or white. And we all eventually, hopefully, have a home and a roof above our head. We got to go back to our family and our children. We want to protect them, whether they're black or white, right? And that's what the black communities are saying is, listen, the players are saying, we don't want to live in fear. We want to be able to do what everybody else is able to do. We have a different situation, a different set of circumstances. And that's very true. And I understand that. There's also a different set of circumstances for the good cops out there right now. They're on an island in some ways. And so this is the dilemma you have. Do you support your law enforcement completely and solely, or do you demand some change? But if so, what types of changes? You know, we hear the defund the police. Defunding the police, there's so many people out there don't even understand what that means. It doesn't mean that we're getting rid of all policemen and taking away all the money. It means we don't have to fund these police departments that have so much money in some cases, and we can take some of that money and move it to other places to help in other areas. That's what defunding the police, that's what they mean. It does not mean we're stripping all the money from every police department and everybody's going to run rogue and there'll be total riots and there'll be disobedience and there'll be no law enforcement and everybody's just going to run ragged and it'll be chaos. That's not what defunding the police is about. It's about, and it is kind of weird because you hear the term, it does sound that way, doesn't it? Defund the police, you immediately think, well, they mean they want to get rid of the police. That's not necessarily the case. Now, in some towns, they've kind of talked about that. But it is a complicated issue, ladies and gentlemen. I don't like to talk about it. I really, really don't. But it is an issue that has to be talked about. And if we can't talk about it, whether it's me, whether it's Dusty, whether it's you, whether you're black, whether you're white, whatever your descent is, if we cannot talk about this in a calm and orderly fashion, then we have a problem. Clearly, we have a problem. There has to be listening on both sides. And perhaps what the NBA players are doing in the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday, perhaps they push the envelope to where that will speed up the process of having more dialogue. And maybe there'll be real change. And maybe some people's lives can be saved. And maybe eventually we can get police departments working together and get rid of the bad apples, whether it be a bad apple. See, there's bad apples in the police department. And we've talked about that, right? But there's also bad apples with these protests and these marches. And people want to focus on, you know, people that say this all the time, once again, contradict themselves. Well, there's a lot of great cops out there. Why do we focus on the bad cops? Yet that same person will tell me about how people are rioting and looting. And I'll say, well, those are bad apples in the protesting place, right? In a way, that's very similar. Wouldn't you say, Dusty? There's bad apples in each. So if you're going to be like, you want to say, listen, you got to remember all the great police officers out there. Well, then why don't you remember all the great peaceful protesters that are out there? So people adjust their argument to fit their agenda. Why can't we just see it, the broad picture, and go, you know what? You're right. There are bad apples in the police department. Let's not judge every police officer as a bad person, because they're not. Let's not judge people that do bad things that are peacefully marching and then all of a sudden they loot a store or they rob or whatever, and you immediately just label everybody a bad apple. No. Understand, there's good protesters out there, good people. They're having their voice heard because they have the freedom to do that in a peaceful way. Just because there's violence in a protest doesn't mean all protests are violent. Just as a police stop between a white officer and a black man doesn't always end in violence. It doesn't. There's many, many situations where there have been traffic stops and there have been no problems. But when lives are lost, and there is violence from either perspective, whether you're protesting or whether it's with a traffic stop or whatever the case may be, should that be addressed? Absolutely. Should it be discussed? Absolutely. And we need to do whatever we can in this country to make things better. And if we're not willing to listen, then we're part of the problem. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to that part of it because I pretty much in agreement with most of that. And when we talk about cops, it brought me to a guy that I actually go to, or I went to high school with. He's my age, he's a year younger than me in school. He lives in Portland now, and he's a police officer in Portland. And Portland's had riots from the beginning of whenever the George Floyd riots start, and they're still going on right now in Portland. Mm-hmm. And he said the other night that he's like, you're kind of on your own at times right now if you're in Portland and you have problems, because there were 3 cop cars available to take calls the other night because all the other cops were dealing with riots. And so take a look at the other side of it sometimes, mm-hmm. and understand what's going on, because I know Todd and I know his character. unless it's changed. And, you know, I haven't been in high school for 19, 20 years.
Sure.
But I know Todd. I know his family. I know his character. I know what he stands for. And I know that he's going to be doing things the right way. And he's tired right now. He's got to go to work every night and deal with these protests. And he's just tired. And so when you do start thinking about that side of the angle of it, you know, my family's in law enforcement, but they're in the small communities here in Kansas, all of my family that is in law enforcement right now. But yeah, I'm kind of thinking about Todd in Portland, where there's riots every night, and that's his job. He goes to work every single night to deal with riots. Mm-hmm. And he's tired. And I think that's where a lot of people are.
A lot of people are tired.
In this country, we're tired. Whether you're on whatever side you're on.
Yeah, you're tired of. You're tired of police brutality.
Yes.
You're tired of racial profiling. You're tired of social injustice. You're tired of racial inequality. You're tired of protest. You're tired of riots. You're tired of politicians talking but not saying, not doing what they say they're going to do. You're tired of people pointing fingers. You're tired of people arguing. You're tired of people always trying to rationalize their agenda. You're tired of people not listening. You're tired of people always worried about themselves. I could go on and on and on. Yeah. You're right. We're tired of COVID-19. We're tired of masks, and many people are. We're tired of being told this is what we have to do. Very frustrating times all the way around.
That's where we're at right now.
We're all tired.
It's just, I don't know when or if it gets better or what you.
Oh, it will.
And it will. And I know right now it doesn't seem like it will, but it's just like, what is that point where? And a lot of stuff we're talking about here, what's the end game,
yes,
too?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
where's the end? And that's what we're all waiting for.
Yeah.
We're just so, you know, you're just in it and you're nervous and you're just like,
where
you
does
know,
this lead?
Go on. And I'm not talking about sports. I'm not nervous about the NBA coming back.
Me neither.
I told one of my cousin last night, I said, because he was saying, how effective is it with Kenny Smith going off the set when, like, a casual fan probably, if they're watching that show, might not even know he was gone. They don't really know who he is, and they might not miss him. I said, I don't think the term in sports right now of casual fan even exists anymore. I said, you're a fan or you're not right now. I said, people went without these sports for so long that they realized they could live without them.
Right.
And I think that's the issue there is, like, I don't think casual fan exists anymore. So I think it's more of, yeah, we know Kenny's not there because we always watch this show on TNT and he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they didn't hear his little speech and why he left. So, yeah, it's just, for me, it's what's the end game? And, you know,
I think that's
where do
really,
we go?
I think that's really
where sweet. Do we go from here?
I think you said that very well. I think what is the end game? What is next? And since this is a sports talk show, Sports Ticket, of course, my biggest question is on my sheet, what's next for sports?
Yeah.
And then to go one step further, as you just said, what's next, period, in general, in society and in life, and you know, what's next and what's the end game? You're right. Those are the questions.
And I'm not trying to trivialize say anything one way or the other about this needs to stop or this needs to stop, whatever.
Right.
It's just, it's human nature. It's where we're at right now. Where does this end?
I don't think anybody knows.
No, absolutely nobody knows.
If we
knows.
Did know, then we could predict all this stuff, and then we'd be, you know, rolling in it because Vegas let us cash in our chips and our bets because we got it right. Man, wild times. I saw a funny meme. Let's end on this with a little bit of a little levity. You ready for this? So I saw this meme the other day. It was Leonardo DiCaprio sitting back in a chair, and he says, he goes, I'll have a Corona and two hurricanes. And the bartender said that'll be 2020.
Yeah.
That seems to sum up this year, doesn't it?
Punch your ticket to local sports talk with the Sports Ticket Podcast. Now available via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.